Okay, it is, I believe, Chof Hei Adar, 19th of March. I think this is our fourth session learning the Sefer Musar Avicha by Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. We'll be continuing on page Chof Hei in the Svarim. Just to review, Hein Yiras Hashem Hi Chochma V'sur Meira Avina. Pasuk in Iyov, behold, fear of God is chachma, and straying, turning away from bad is bina, is understanding. And our sages in the Gemara give a deeper insight, even though the simple reading of the word hein means like hine, behold, but hein also has a secondary meaning, which is one. So our sages say there is only one thing that is chachma, hein, one thing that is chachma, that is Yiras Hashem. And this raises an obvious question, which is what Rav Kook addressed in the piece that we read last week. There are many things that seem to be chachma, many things that involve insight and contemplation. So he said an idea that I've been thinking about all week, and I think it requires more time. And I told you many of the ideas in this Sefer, and all of Rav Kook's writings are very deep, and we have to ponder them. But what he said is that everything else in the world that involves chachma, the chachma is incidental. If all of the facts surrounding that field of knowledge were revealed, it would just be knowledge. It would not be chachma, the process of having to probe deeply. It's only because some things are not revealed, so in order to figure things out, in order to gain those pieces of knowledge, I have to use chachma. But once I use chachma, it all turns to yediyah. Yediyah is simply knowledge. What Rav Kook says is that there's one field of, there's one area of study that is inherently chachma. There is no such thing as just knowing it. It necessarily requires chachma, and that is Yiras Hashem. He doesn't explain exactly why. I think I'm not incorrect to say that what he means, I'm elaborating now, but I think this is what he means, is that there's one thing that God created that stands out from everything else. That's man's free will. Everything else God created is part of Teva. It all does what he's supposed to do. He created one being who has one faculty which can be at odds, quote-unquote, with the will of Hashem. Free will. Man's free will. Every other force of nature, be it a single cell, be it Mount McKinley, be it a solar system, whatever it is, but it does what God tells it to do. There's one being who can say, I would prefer not to. Which short story is that? I would prefer not to. Oh, I'm disappointed. The girls in our high school knew that. Anyway. Bartleby. Huh? Bartleby the Scrivener. Oh, thank you. Good. I couldn't remember. It's been a while. Bartleby the Scrivener. I would prefer not to. This famous short story. Everything he's told. I would prefer not to. Yeah. Bartleby the Scrivener. I'm trying to educate you.
This is a person's name?
Yeah, it's a famous short story. But the idea is that he doesn't want to do what he's supposed to do. Man is the only being who can, at the same moment that he is the beneficiary of all of the good that God gives him, and he's enjoying the beautiful trees outside, and he's breathing in air, and his entire system is running by the good grace of God, but he can say, I would prefer not to fulfill your will. Man is the only creature who has free will. He therefore has the struggle of realigning himself with Yiras Hashem. So I think what Rav Kook means is the one thing that stands out in nature is that man has a tendency and a yetzer not to do the will of Hashem. Therefore, to have Yiras Hashem, to say, no, I must do what all other creatures do and follow the will of God, even though I'm created with a tendency not to, that is chachma. Everything else is just knowledge. How does this system work? How does that system work? So maybe the knowledge isn't revealed, so we have to figure it out. So we use chachma to gain knowledge, but ultimately everything else is just knowledge of the teva, of the nature that God created. But there's one thing that's inherently paradoxical. Is man vis-a-vis Yiras Hashem, there's a paradox, there's a contradiction. Again, I'm elaborating, I think this is what he means. The only way to reconcile them is to work at it. That's the one thing that necessarily requires chachma, because it's not natural. The inner conflict between man's desires and his deep down awareness he should be doing the will of Hashem, and how to work out those two, that is Yiras Hashem, and that is that requires chachma per se. Everything else might incidentally require chachma, because the truth of it is not revealed, but once the truth is revealed, it turns back to Yediyah and not chachma. Again, a deep idea, but something that we can think about. So he says that's what our sages really mean when they say there's only one thing that is really chachma, and that is man inculcating Yiras Hashem, fear of God, within himself. So let's now go to page Chaf Hei, Os Gimel. So the end of the pasuk is Vesur Meira Avina. And turning from bad, straying from bad, is Bina. Bina means understanding. The Gemara defines it, and that's the classic definition, as Maven Davar Mitoch Davar, understanding one thing from another. You're told one thing, and I infer from that something else. So says Rav Kook, V'navin Gamkein, bottom of page Chafei, V'navin Gamkein Divrei Siyum HaKosev, and we will also understand, meaning based on what we've said thus far, the end, the conclusion of the pasuk, she'amar, that it says there in that pasuk in Iyo, v'sur me'ra bina, and turning from evil is bina, is understanding. Shelo amar shelo la'asos ra, it didn't say not doing bad. Ki im v'sur me'ra, turning from bad. Let's see what he means.
Saying deciding to turn from bad.
Well, let's see, he'll define it for us, hold on. V'halo yeshnam dvarim, turning the page, yeshnam dvarim yiduim shehim ra. There are many things that are known to be bad. Kol masha asr ha-Torah b'chlal u'b'frat. Really could be defined as everything that the Torah forbids, generally and specifically. V'im kein, and if so, naisi sefer v'nechse. That's an Aramaic expression. It means bring a book and look. What he means is, what's the big bina? What's the big understanding in avoiding bad? You want to know what's bad? Don't do this. Don't do that. It's all charted out for you. It's all spelled out. Doesn't require any deep thoughts. It's all there. Open up a Shulchan Aruch. Open up a Musa Svar. Kishin Nilmod Neda Eich Shalalasos. When we'll learn, we'll know how not to do. You want to know what not to do? It's all written there. So he's posing this as a question. So why is it Bina? Bina means deep understanding. Answer. Aval Hahasara. But this verb that's used here, turning away, or removing oneself from, hahasara, eina hedar ha'asiya levad, is not merely the lack of doing. Sur meira doesn't just mean I didn't do bad. Kiyim sheyia bidrochav meruchok mehara, but that in his very ways, in his midos, he is distanced from bad. Person can opt not to do bad, but he really relates to it very much. That's not sur meira. Sur meira is where in his very ways he naturally is far away from bad. V'zeh yitachen, and this can be, kishayavin lefi sichlo kavonos ha-Torah, when he understands per his seichel the intent of the Torah, l'shamrenu mehara, to guard us from bad, Viliros be'emes, and for him to see in truth, ona ritzonius baruch nota lefanos latov, where the will of Hashem is turning, is leaning to turn one to good. In other words, if the Torah says don't do it, and I say, all right, he's the boss, so I'm not doing it, but I really would like to, I really wish I could do that, that is not doing bad, but you can't say that person is sur meira. Sur meira means when he's fully processed and understands and has a deep wisdom of understanding where the Torah means for him to be and why it has to be that way and why that's better for him, that is Bina. So he says, Oz Yosra Mehara Bechefetz Nafsha. Then he'll go away from bad by the full will of his soul, Vaha Karaso HaAmitis, and his recognition, a true recognition of it. So he says, we're on the 2, 4, 6, 7, 6th line. V'zeh mischalef harbe ben ish la'ish. And this varies greatly from person to person. In other words, I'll just summarize what he's about to say. Not doing bad is the same. You didn't do that sin, and you didn't do that sin, and he didn't do that sin, and she didn't do that sin. But how a person makes himself or herself not do that Avera and be far away from that Avera varies from person to person. Even though the not doing, heder means the lack of. Ish lo ne'edar. The lack of doing bad, which includes the general rule, that's the same for everyone. Aval hadrachem ech lasur mimenu. But the ways how to get away from it, miyuchadim b'kol ish, they are unique to each person, lefitivo umatzavo v'sichlo, per his nature, his situation, and his seichel. One person's nature is different. Well, what one person struggles with for another person is nothing. One person is in a circumstance that is very compromising or makes one prone to a certain avera or distanced from another sin. Or his seichel, the way he understands things, the way things go through his mind. So that changes, varies from person to person. Im kein, if so, l'meniya me'asosra e'ef shalomer shehibina. So just saying, refraining from doing bad, we can't call that bina. That's just not doing. Don't do it. It says, I know I'm not supposed to do it, don't do it. You can't call that havonas davar mitoch davar. The definition of bina is figuring out one thing from another. It's not written on the page. You have to read between the lines. That's bina. So that it doesn't require bina to just not do what's wrong. Even though, now this gets back to the same idea he was saying in the previous section. What he's saying is sometimes we use a particular faculty to arrive at something, but that doesn't mean that faculty was really necessary inherently to get there. Like we said before, if all of the science of the world was spelled out in a clear textbook, you'd read it, it would all be yediyah, it would all be knowledge. Because some things haven't been revealed, the scientist has to think and contemplate and theorize and extrapolate, and he'll use chachma to arrive at something. But once he discovers electricity, now it's just written, now it's just yediyah. This is how this works. This is how it works, right? Now, for the rest of us, subsequently, it's just yediyah. What he's saying is the same thing here. It could very well be, probably always is this way, that we have to use bina to understand what we shouldn't do. To study the Torah, some parts are hard. But once I figure it out, now it's just knowledge. To figure out what the Avera is. I read a pasuk in the Torah, and then I saw what the oral tradition said about it, and the Rambam understood it this way, and the Ravid understood it that way, and I had a question, I had an answer. But at the end of the day, all right, so we figure out that this is what the halacha is, so now it's knowledge. So even though you might have to use bina to know what's included in bad, right? Some of the things aren't clear. People ask a shayla, am I allowed to do this? Am I not allowed to do this? Is this unethical or is it, sometimes not clear. But once we work it out, we go through the sources and we figure it out, now it's a piece of knowledge. But after they become known, these pieces of knowledge become known to man, now it becomes simple knowledge. Which doesn't require understanding. Again, I may have used understanding to get there, but now it turns into just knowledge. So what do I have to do now? Now I have another challenge. I got to remember it. Every year, Pesach time, how does this work again? What's this? So that's something else. Guarding it, remembering it, that's a whole other discussion. He talks at length about memory also, and there's a reason why Hashem made us forget things so much. It makes us work hard. It makes us keep coming to the shiur. Otherwise, you come once. I happen to have in my car right now. I have a recording of Ravadi Yosef talking about a chazal, how you have to say things with your mouth because people naturally forget, and we all forget things. I'm listening to him. Yeah, I'm praying I should be as forgetful as he is. The man knows kol haTorah kulah. But even he said it. But that's something else. So what it needs after it becomes knowledge is we have to guard it. But it is simply knowledge. As opposed to something that inherently is bina. Now he writes, "Ukar kosav hachacham hamufla, Rav Yashar Mikandia." This is astounding. Sometimes these chachamim bali musar quote someone, and it's just astounding that they have knowledge. Rav Yashar Mikandia, that stands for Yosef Shlomo Rofe. He was a deeply profound thinker. I don't think I could understand one page of what Rav Yashar Mikandia wrote. He was a doctor. There were many old svarim that combined medicine and Jewish philosophy and Musar and Kabbalah, and they're extremely hard to read. Rav Kook has knowledge of these Torah, but he writes, "Kvar Kosav HaChacham HaMufla Rav Yashar Mikanye V'Sifra Eilim." He has a sefer called Sefer HaElim because it says in B'Shalach that they came Elima, and there were 12 springs. He has a sefer that addresses 12 different issues, so based on that, that's what he called it. But he writes there, Shekoach, many of these Torah like define the different faculties of man and how to use them properly. So he writes there, Shekoach HaSechel Eino Kiyim Hadoru Shel Iyan. Sechel, we call Sechel, that's things that require analysis, depth. Iyan means you're like staring at something, like the word ayin is an eye. You're staring at something, you're contemplating it. Aval hayidia hi koach acher. But knowledge is something else. Knowledge takes work also. It's hard to fit a lot of knowledge into a small brain. So knowledge takes work also, but he says seichel is a different process. A person can be studying for hours on end, and it can all be yediyah, not seichel. Okay? So he defines there that seichel is a different faculty. So what Rav Kook is saying is if these psukim, and as elaborated upon by Chazal, talk about things that are inherently chachma and inherently bina, it means they're not just knowledge. They necessarily require not only deep analysis, but personal analysis, because it varies from person to person.
On a simple level, could it be that, I think he means more than this, but would an example being like somebody who knows you don't drive on Shabbos, but they're clueless about what Shabbos is really about. Like you could know like a particular, but in order to say you have an understanding of why you don't do something like out there, like drive or use money, but you never, you don't know the big picture or the intent of Shabbos.
Right. Everybody has their challenges. What irks me? What do I have a challenge with in aligning my will with the will of Hashem? I don't relate to the idea of rabbinic law. I don't relate to the deeds, whatever. So, or it could be in a specific thing, it could be in a general thing. And how a person grapples with that and reaches the, and aligns his will with the will of Hashem, where I have stronger desires in a certain area, and I lack the bitachon to realize that they were put there for a purpose and they're meant to be synthesized with the will of Hashem and they're not at odds with the will of Hashem. And my ratzon is not supposed to, how
so
we
would
grapple
with the will
that
of Hashem be like, say, Shemar B'Zachar? You know,
right.
So that you have to have that understanding of what that the will of Hashem is telling you, that all these particulars are not going to get you there, even if you can.
Right, which is why he said in the first line of Bayes, anything that brings a person to Yira is included in Yira. So yeah, this the study of particular mitzvahs in a way that makes a person relate to it and makes him really understand that. That's all
that
part of
help.
Yiras Hashem. If Yiras Hashem just meant, you know, be a good boy, yeah, we have a lot of extra writing. I think there's a reason why in every area there's a lot of wisdom that has to be studied in order for a person to have Yiras Hashem. An infinite God is not easy to relate to. There's a lot of study that man has to do to get that. Yeah.
You're saying the natural nature of man is really to be godly. I mean, in essence, and that we in a way have like gone away from the way that we're really meant to be.
Yeah, but I think also in it, the nature of man is to have trouble with being godly too,
right.
And that's why it requires bina to get back there.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what he says. Avala hasara mehara, but the straying away from evil. Kol echad lefit. You know, staying away from it. Kol echad lefi inyano, each person per his matters, per his circumstance. Dorish boze derech acher meyuchad umetsuyon. Each one needs a unique and special path. Uloze vade drusha bina yaseirin. That definitely requires exceeding bina. It needs a lot of bina. Okay, where things are one size fits all, you open the book and you read it. But when your unique circumstances require their own response, you have to figure it out yourself. So it requires bina because each one is different. I can't read what the other guy did. I can extrapolate from what he wrote and figure out, but it's not going to fit my circumstance exactly. And again, I think it all gets back to what he wrote in the first paragraph of the book, that every person who's a great Baal Seichel has to interpret Musar in his own way, because through his filter, it comes out slightly different. We can all take what it says in Mesilas Yesharim and Chovos HaLevavos and all the teachings of our sages, but what it means when it's filtered through your neshama comes out something different than someone else's. Because each neshama has its challenges and its strengths. Sheyavin midvarim achadim, that he can understand from a few words. Meaning, yeah, we have certain directives, we have certain concepts, but how you understand from that, how it relates to you, kafi havanasa, per his understanding, b'inyanei ha-Torah u'drachiha, in the matters of the Torah and its ways, ech heim po'alim alav l'tova u'l'kdusha, how they work on him for good and for holiness, l'lechas b'derach zeh b'inyanem ha-protiyim asher lav, to go in this path, in this way, in the particular matters that are his. Each person's life circumstance is different. Elsewhere, there's a famous thing they quote from Cook Sefer Oros. In the tefillah that we usually say just on the High Holy Days and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur as an added tefillah, it's really a tefillah in the Gemara and Brachos. Elokai ad shelo notzarti eini chadai. My God, before I was created, I wasn't worthy. V'achshuv shenotzarti k'ilu lo notzarti. Now that I've been created, it's as if I haven't been. So he says, what does it mean, God, before I was created, I wasn't worthy? He said, what that means is, if a person will think, why wasn't I created in 14th century Spain, or why wasn't I put here or there? The answer is because the neshama wasn't meant to be there. And if I came into existence this time, in this place, because in his infinite wisdom, God understood that this is exactly where I belong, with this set of circumstances, with these strengths, with these weaknesses, and it's our job to make the tikkun, to make the most of ourselves per that, to think that it's wrong. You know, my whole life is no good because I really should have been better at this or not had this challenge. That's wrong. That's doubting Hashem's hashkacha. To the contrary, ad shelo notzarti eini chadai. Before I was created, obviously I wasn't worthy of being created, or I would have been. So each person has his inyonim hapratiyim, and how to apply the Torah messages that he learns to his particular circumstance necessarily is Bina. Again, to just open the book, say, oh, this is forbidden, I won't do it, that's not Bina. But how to have it in the Midas, as he said, Bedrachav, in his ways, the Torah says, V'halachta Bedrachav, you shall go, in Parshas Kisavo, you shall go in his ways, which Chazal, our sages, define as meaning not just to do acts of Chesed or of Chani, it's just, rather Chazal in defining that mitzvah, which the Rambam says is a central mitzvah in the Torah, say, just as he is merciful, you shall be merciful. Just as he is favorable, you shall be, you know, show favor and all, and so on. It means to have those midas, so to have this in one's midas. Now he writes, five lines from the bottom, V'yeshal ayin. I'm not sure exactly how to read this sentence, but maybe help me out. V'yeshal ayin, that usually means, and we have to look into, sometimes a person writes V'yeshal ayin when he's not sure what the answer is, which might be the way he means it here. Yeshal ayin, one can look into, kama hadrochim hapratim mesurim lakol, how much or to what degree the individual paths are given over to all, meaning every person has his or her individual dominion over his own path. V'sheinam mesurim kiyim l'talmidei chachamim sheheim makirim hadrochim, and those that are given over only to Torah scholars who understand the ways, he means better. O gam l'chol ish yosher shenasan Hashem yisbarach dey b'levav ladach ech lismoch b'tomu v'yosher. Or to a person who is straight, presumably not quite a Talmid Chacham, but he has good das in his heart to know how to support what is wholesome and correct. So I'm not sure if he's asking that as a question. Meaning we have to look into, to what degree do I have my own, do it yourself? And to what degree do you have to turn to somebody who knows better? Or does he just mean one can marvel at the fact that you have, I'm not sure exactly how to take this sentence, but he ends off and says, V'im yitain levavo l'hisbone, if one will apply his heart to contemplate, yuchol kol echad lahasig miteva nasho darka yosher rabim. One will be able to achieve, to grasp from his own nature many great straight paths, darka yosher, many paths to straightness. Clearly what he means with that line is that we have a lot of potential here within ourselves. No. I couldn't get it right the first time. No, I'm just not sure how to read. Honestly, I'm not sure how to read the sentence. He says, one, yeshla ayin means there is to look. It's usually an expression we use in Svarim when we mean the matter needs further exploration. But I think what he means is It's not exactly clear to what degree we have complete autonomy, and since this is your challenge, you address it with your own wisdom entirely, versus how much do I have to turn to others, Talmidei Chachamim, those who have a good sense, and I guess what we would call Musar. But at any rate, he concludes and says, any person who applies himself to it can achieve Darkei Yosher Rabim, many paths in Yosher. Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, the great Mir Mashkiach, is quoted, he wrote this actually in the introduction to his Sefer, that if a person is studying Torah and has seen the commentaries and still has a difficulty with it, at the end of the day, the best commentary, the answer he'll find within himself. Mm-hmm. What he means by that, the Chovos HaLevavos writes about how Hashem gave us two things to know Him, the Torah and your Seichel. Those are the two pieces. One without the other doesn't work. This computer right here has more Torah recorded in it than any of us, but it doesn't have Torah because it doesn't have a Seichel. So your Seichel is the other piece. And what he's saying is a person applies his seichel. God gave us that seichel that we can interpret a lot. Does it mean we'll achieve everything? And not necessarily. Maybe we need the direction from the outside. And today, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of svarim. But a person who will apply himself will, from his own bina, will gain a lot. Yeah.
Is he also saying, like, look inward for the, like, instead of looking, like, get advice and learn, but then you have to look inward to really... working through.
Right, that's I believe so. But that's well said.
I think the, like, not to wax too sociological, but like Western civilization just did the seichel without the Torah.
Right, right.
But just like look inside, find yourself, get your own way.
Right,
and
this
I think
is
it's
a very
the combination of saying it's not just looking inside.
Right, this is a very interesting dynamic whenever we study Torah. Because on the one hand, we say it's Hashem telling us what to do. On the other hand, we use our seichel to interpret it. Well, the message here can't be like this because that's so clearly not moral. That's not what it would mean. Therefore, it must mean like this. So the answer is it's really the combination of the two. We use our seichel in understanding what the message is, but we listen to the message. It's a combination of the two. And you can make a mistake on either side. I only go by my own intuition. It's just, you know, it's all morally, you know, human and all those movements. Or, you know, just read it black and white with no interpretation, with no bina, and then come to a very wrong conclusion as to what it meant. Hein yiras Hashem, hi chachma. It requires chachma. It's not, you know, it's not just, as we say, spitback. It requires analysis and processing. And he's saying it's the only thing that necessarily requires analysis and processing. So he concludes, "Vizehu inyan divrei Chazal." This is what the Chazal really mean. The hardest Gemaras are, I got it. The I got it sections. Even though we can have a complicated halachic Gemara, does it work like this? It's about three opinions and then four opinions times the three opinions. Complicated, but at the end of the day, you work it through logically, you understand it. But there's some times when Chazal just make a statement, and it's hard to know what are they really referring to. So. This Chazal, Kol Hashem, the word is really Hashem, or Chosav Olam Hazeh, Zocha V'Roa B'Yeshuas HaShalakad V'Roa. Hashem means like to assess. Anybody who does an assessment of his ways in this world will merit and see the salvation of Hashem. The assessment means to apply all the wisdom of the Torah through his own challenges, his own circumstances. That's ultimately what that single line in Chazal means, everything that we were just talking about the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, could we just clarify? I'm starting to get a little confused in all this discussion now between, I think they lead to each other in a progression, Seichel to Bina to Chachma. Is that the gist of this at all, or am I just getting totally mired in it?
Some the words are used differently in different places. I believe he's using Bina to mean when you look at one thing and you have to infer what that would mean. In a different, it's not written there. Someone else would say, where did you see that here? And you have to say, well, because once he's saying this, that would imply it. We have to extrapolate. And so Seichel, I think, is more general. Seichel is iyun, analysis, which can also involve somewhat intuition. Usually when they talk about chachma, bina, and das, chachma is knowledge. Bina is what you infer. And then das is a sense you get. I can't even necessarily show you how I got to the das from the chachma, the bina, but it's once one has made his mind and his soul work a certain way, you come to certain conclusions. And I think that's the way he's using Seichel. He's using it as a more general, deeper analytical thinking part of man. He's not really defining it, but certainly it means something that requires a lot of thought.
That's, so Bina doesn't involve so much insight as much as inference?
Okay, that's well said, yeah.
No, Seichel, it's a question.
Yeah, I think you're right. so then, yes, I think Seichel is insight and Bina is inference, yeah.
Oh, Seichel is insight.
Yeah. Yeah, Bina's Maven. In fact, if you look, he there's a Gemara that has a pasuk, and it has the phrase Navon Dover. If you look at footnote Yud asterisk, that's the Gemara Chagig that he mentioned. Havonas that Tzvi Yehuda, his son, tries to show that every word that his father is saying is really a Gemara, which is very true. When he said that's not Bina, that's not Havonas Dover Mitoch Dover. That's the Gemara's definition. That's not Rav Kook's definition. The definition of Bina is inferring one thing from another. It's a Gemara in Chagiga, where it's dashing a pasuk. It's actually a negative pasuk, where Hashem is saying, "I'm going to remove from you people like this and like that." And then it says Vina Unavon Dover, and people understand. So the Gemara defined it means people who can infer one thing from another. Okay. Okay. Dalit, another idea. A powerful idea. Aveira metamtemes libo shaladam. The timtum is stoppage. It's a blockage, something that impedes. So that's a quote from Chazal, from our sages. You can see in the footnotes, Gemara and Yuma and elsewhere. Sin causes a blockage in the heart of man. What it means is that man should naturally relate to spiritual things, and sin makes him not feel it. Sometimes we see it to an extreme. Somebody who, other people are very moved by something, another person can, for one, many people is inspiring, and somebody else is there, and it's dead. There's nothing there. It's a terrible thing. So sin causes that blockage. Rav Kook explains, mitzad shehi aveira. By mere dint of the fact that it is, aveira means violation, being over on ratzon Hashem, means by the mere fact that it is violation. We say it's not like some kind of punishment. Aveira itself causes that. Im kain, if so, ein chilek bein achilas iser o dvarim b'teilim u'bitol Torah. It makes no difference really what type of violation it is, whether I ate something forbidden or I squandered the gifts that Hashem gave me. I could have used communication to study, to talk about things that are important, to help people, and I just speak dvarim b'teilim. Dvarim b'teilim means like the worst type of idle chatter, b'tel Torah, and simple negation of Torah. I could have pursued Torah and just deliberately let it go by the wayside, which Chazal speak pretty strongly about. Milvad ma shehi aveira, aside from the fact that it's bad in and of itself, it's a violation of Hashem's will, he mitamtemes es halev. It stops up the heart. The next time around when he comes, and many classic Musar Sfarim talk about this, when he wants to feel connected, the ruchni, the spirituality is not there. And when he will go in his habit, the word ragil, the word regular, is really from ragil. It means what somebody is accustomed to. When he will go, per his habit, ba'afela, in darkness, lo yargish timtum halev, he will not feel it. Each sin is causing a further blockage. There's more mud piled up upon me, but I don't feel it. I just cast on some more mud, but I don't feel it because I'm well beneath it anyway. Didn't I? Here's the scary part. Rakishayaska lavod vililmod. Just when he starts to serve and to study, when I want to engage service of God, I want to connect with the Almighty, I want to study His Torah, relate to His Word, that's when he'll feel it. Kemo ha-ro'ev kama yamim, like a person who's famished, he's starved for several days. Sha'ayidei re'ach ha-ma'achal, that by the smell of the food, mischazik etzlo ha-re'ev, and suddenly the hunger, he suddenly feels those hunger pangs like he hasn't felt them in days. He smells, ooh, that smells good. Now he feels starving. Kimoshakosu mitznuvo sadai. That is from a pasuk in Eicha. The pasuk says those who fell from the sword and those who fell from hunger. And it says mitznuva, something like from the bounty of the field. And Chazal say it means those who fell from hunger, particularly when they smelled something good, that the hunger killed them. So it's making an allusion to, or he's referencing a Chazal on the Medrash in Eich. It's quoted in Rashi there, I believe. Ukamosha Pirshu Zal, as our Chacham explained, that's the idea there. Al Kain, so what do we get from this? Al Kain lo yatamid chas v'shalom shav al keyo. A person has to be careful not to constantly or continuously be one. Shav al keyo is a pasuk in Mishlei, kekelev shav al keyo ksil shona bi'ivalto. Like a dog that returns to. Key is vomit. Like a dog that returns to that which it has spit out, which it has regurgitated, so does the fool go back to his sin. Very simple message. Rabbeinu Yonah talks about it. The dog ate something that obviously wasn't too good for him because he couldn't keep it down. It didn't get better for him the second time around, but he returns to it. Pardon the graphic description, but sometimes I think our Nevi'im want to shock us a little bit. The fool going back to his sin that he's already spit out, it gets worse the second time. It had a bad reaction with him the first time. It's only going to be a lot worse the second time. And the foolishness of going back to it after he had to expel it, that is, so, you know, there's nothing like a good mushal. When a person repeats,
graphic.
Yeah, when he repeats an aver, that's what he's supposed to think about. I'm going back to things that I already spit out. So says Rav Kook, sorry, that's why we do this after breakfast.
But it's a great analogy, like for like extreme addiction, like, you know, a that's drunk exactly, who, yeah. That's exactly what happens, yeah. And then they go and get for the
yeah.
same thing.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect example.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how what you see in addiction is a perfect muscle for a lot of things with the Eight Sahara.
Right,
you
but
see
that
such
is the
irrational and destructive behavior. So he says, therefore, a person should not be Shav Al Keo. Why this is so frightening? Ki Timtum Halev Misgadel Bachol Pam. If the Navi, Shlomo Melech, is critical of the repeat offender, he's Shav Al Keo, meaning it's worse the second time around. That has to mean that the timtum halev, this spiritual blockage that it creates, grows each time. And he says, "V'kevan sha'od lo mo'as hara legamre." And since he has not rejected, mo'as means to find disgusting, to reject. Since he has not rejected the bad, legamre means entirely. Yesh lochush, one has to be concerned. Shenishar adayin imo ma'at. There's still a little bit left. What Rav Kook is saying is a very frightening idea. I have a bad midah, and I was learning about it and reading about it. Yeah, I really shouldn't be that way. So I carved out 90% of it. It was a whole musa shir. Great, worked at it. But the 10% is still there. I'm still 10% arrogant. Got 90% cut away, but it's still there. So then when I go back and I act upon it, it expands, and the bad thing is he thinks he's past it, and it's still there, so it's looming.
I'm sorry. Is this just with repeating the same avera, or is this, you know, a whole?
Well, that's what he's talking about. Particularly, I think he's saying the fact that an avera is matamtem is particularly frightening with regard to a repeat avera, especially one that one thinks one has eliminated, because if it's really still there. So when I act on it again, I think I've moved past it. Yeah, I dealt with that one already, and I'm moving forward. I think I'm on to the next thing, but it's still there. And he uses a term here, Yesh Lochosh, the Chozer V'Neir. You know Chozer V'Neir? The Chozer V'Neir is a Yoredeya term. Chozer V'Neir means it goes back and is reawakened. Big discussion in Hilchos Pesach, right? We know that if something is nullified before Pesach, you were cooking before Pesach, and a tiny drop of chametz got mixed in, so it's batel b'shishim, it's like it's not there. But some Rishonim hold, but when Pesach, we don't pass in this way, that's the good news. But some Rishonim hold that when Pesach comes, oh, on Pesach, any trace of chametz is a problem. So it woke back up. The concept where you can have something that you think has been nullified, but it's dormant. It's a little bit like when you have a fleshig knife. You use this knife to cut hot steak 3 weeks ago, and now you cut an onion with it. It's the, for rabbis, that's the most scary thing. Onions and not because you have right because it had these dormant, what we call sleeping absorptions of fleishig, but when you cut something sharp, so it rekindles the flavor in them again. That's the way the halacha works, but that's what chos avineir is. That something that was dormant and we thought it was benign, all of a sudden it flared up. So yesh lochish, one has to be concerned. Shenisha adayin imamat, is still a little bit left in him. The chozer v'neir, and it goes back and is reawakened, like the word air. Ani yeshena v'libi air means awake. Uri, uri, to wake up. Kevin shalonis bata lagamri, since it has not been entirely nullified. And that's a very strong statement about how we got to get 100 on the Musa test, not a 95, because we have to work on midos fully. Now, yeah, I worked a little bit on that one, a little bit on that one, but that means all the bad midos are still left. And that's why he ends with like this strong, Ubal nefesh yosim libo v'sichlo l'das es asher l'fanav. And Baal nefesh, a person who's concerned for his soul, will apply his heart and his sechel to know what's before him. That's an allusion to a pasuk also in Mishlei. When you sit with the king, bin tovin es asher l'fanecha, I think is it. Analyze, think about what's in front of you. In other words, that observation is a very strong lesson that we have to think about what task lies in front of us. That means fully working on the midas, not dabbling. I dabbled in humility and I did a minor, it means we have to work on the midas fully and not allow a chunk of it to remain, because then he says then it's still metamtein. And then I wonder why it is I daven and I learn and it's not resonating. So he's telling me what the problem is. It means I haven't worked on the midos properly, and the timtum halev is still functioning. It's a powerful paragraph. Okay, hey, bottom of page 5, siagos haTorah. A siag is a protective fence. One of the early Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, the ethics of the father, says that the sages were given the mitzvah of Asei Siag LaTorah, to make a protective fence around the Torah. There's a whole literature on this, that actually keeping rabbinic law shows greater love of Hashem than keeping Torah law, because the rabbis were given the job of making a protective fence around the Torah. If something is very precious, I wouldn't leave it out in the open to be stolen and say, well, as long as nobody stole it, no problem. To show that I love it, I would make sure it's properly secure and protected. So the Torah just said what you can't do, but we wouldn't allow ourselves to go right up to the red line if we're concerned for the honor of Hashem. So Hashem says to the Chachamim, Asum Mishmeres L'Mishmarti, is the Gemara, make a protective fence around my laws. Rabbeinu Yonah writes at length about it, it's really a Chazal, that therefore keeping rabbinic law shows greater love of Hashem than keeping Torah law, because it shows that I'm concerned about it. I'm concerned that I not come close to violation. But what Rav Kook is going to tell us is it's more than just a protective measure. And this is really an idea you see in Rishonim, he's elaborating on. Inyan siyagos haTorah, the concept of the protective fences around the Torah. Eino mitzad etzem ha'havola aveira. It's not really because of the essential approach to the aveira. I mean, it's not just because we don't want you to get all the way close to the Avera, which would mean that there's nothing really wrong with that rabbinic prohibition. It's just we want to keep you far away from the Torah violation, which is the real problem, so we made a prohibition surrounding it. Not so. Rak, rather, shekemo sheha'avera ro'a be'inyona, just like transgression is bad in its very essence, Kimokain, similarly, kolha and yonam shemakusharimba, all the things that are tied to it. Bekesher ila va'olul. Ila means cause and olul means caused. In a cycle or a tie of cause and effect. If this will lead to that, and that is bad, then this is also bad. He's saying by definition, ra'im b'inyonam, they in their very nature are bad. You know, it's not just, there's nothing wrong with this, but don't do it, because if you do this, you might do that tomorrow. Now, the mere fact that this today could cause you to do that tomorrow makes this a bad thing per se. V'chadai lifrosh mehem ma'od. And it's therefore worthwhile to stay far away from them. This is an idea we really have in Rishonim, that, so according to Torah law, you only can eat beef that's cooked with dairy. But the sages say, even if they're not cooked, if they're just together, even a cold slice of deli with cheese is also forbidden. And not only beef, but even poultry. So do you just say, well, because people think of it as similar and we want to just be far away from everything? No, what he's saying is that it means there's some things that are close to it that lead to it become bad also. I mean, the Musa's farm talk about we're always either doing good things or bad things, even in the realm of reshus, things that are permissible. The Torah didn't legislate everything in life, but the Musa's farm say if we really analyze our behavior, I'm heading right now in a bad direction, I'm heading in a good direction. I'm not doing a mitzvah per se, but I'm in the mood or in a mode of behavior that's leading toward mitzvah, or in a mode of behavior that's leading toward aveira. I was just teaching in the high school of the pasuk that says before the brothers sold Yosef, it says they went liros es tzon aviyim, to shepherd their father's sheep, but there's two dots on the word es, which makes it as if it's not there. And the sages say they went to shepherd themselves. They went to indulge themselves. Why is that relevant? Okay, so they went to indulge themselves. Clearly, what the sages meant to say is they were in a mood of self-centeredness at their level, but which per se is nothing bad. It's not forbidden, but it must have led to a mindset of this is about me. He said, it didn't lead to rational and good and moral judgment. So even though they weren't doing an Aveira per se, but it's in the mind, the thing that leads toward Aveira is bad also. That's what he says here. And in the footnote, he tells me to look in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. And since we're all in the pre-Pesach spirit, and by coincidence, I happen to have it right here. In the second line. Look at that. Hashgacha Prat is right here. Yeah, that's right. In Chacham Mahu Omer. Yeah, what he's talking about, what happens? The Chacham asks the question, and Haggadah, what happens? The wise son asks the question, and then the answer is very hard to understand. It says, and you should tell him what the laws of Pesach, in Maftir and Achar Pesach Avikomen. The detail that after Avikomen, we don't eat anything. That's not what he was asking. All the commentators talk about, what does that mean? This is what he asked, a broad question. You tell him a detail. So Rav Kook takes a general approach that to a chacham, you have to give him an elaboration of Torah. Elaboration of Torah brings to goodness. The more we study about mitzvos and the flavor of the mitzvah and the logic of the mitzvah and the beauty of the mitzvah, that's a broadening of Torah, which is good for us. It's good for man. I'll just read a little bit. He says, "Be'emes kol ha'histafus v'ha'israchavus shel ha'mitzvah." Histafus means like branching out. Hisrachavus means broadening. All branching out and broadening of a mitzvah. Po'eles hi hatachlis v'ha'kavona kemo etzem ha'mitzvah. Achieves, does the goal like the mitzvah itself. That's why there's this idea of darshaning, of talking about extrapolating upon a mitzvah. On a Yom Tov, we're supposed to not only eat matzah and maror, we're supposed to talk about, Pesach especially, because it's a particular mitzvah, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But on any Yom Tov, we're supposed to give shiurim and learn about what the Yom Tov is about, because you're broadening the Torah. I might be talking about a question that's not relevant to anybody particularly, but the mere fact we're analyzing what would happen if chametz were like this, what would happen if you baked your matzah like that, can you fulfill the mitzvah if you do this, even if it's not so much halacha l'mas, it's not what, not nobody asked that particular question or had that particular shaila, but the discussion, the broadening of Torah does good things. So what he's saying is, by the same token, I'm not going to read this whole piece here, but by the same token, things that lead to aveira have the same effect as aveira, just as things that lead to mitzvah, broadening of mitzvahs, have the same effect as mitzvahs. So that piece of Musar is, it's supposed to be a general feeling, I want to stay away from anything that leads in the direction of aveira. Anything that leads in the direction of aveira is not a good thing. That's the siyag of the Torah. It's not merely a safeguard, it's, so many of our mitzvahs are like that, where the Torah itself says this is forbidden, and the rabbi said, yeah, everything around it is forbidden. get an usher, the chaylov, every almost every mitzvah is like that. Shabbos, what would Shabbos look like without the rabbinic prohibitions? But the Ramban already says that the idea of muktzah is really hinted at in the Torah too. Because if Shabbos is meant to be a day of rest, if you just observe the 39 prohibited activities but don't have it, you would entirely be missing the spirit of Shabbos without this broadening of the definitions that our Chachamim gave. All right, should we just start the next piece? Yeah? We'll read a few lines. Huh? Too much to do? Too much to absorb?
Yeah,
the ideas are deep. Okay, so maybe we'll... Okay, so let us summarize what we have learned thus far. Please remember the pasuk, Hein yiras Hashem hi chochma v'sur me'rabina, pasuk in Iyov, the 28th chapter of Iyov. And the sages say that the word Hain can also mean one. So not only does it mean, behold, Yiras Hashem is Chachma, but it means Yiras Hashem is the singular Chachma. It's the only thing that is really Chachma. Question, we seem to intuitively feel that many things are Chachma. Answer, those are things where you use Chachma to achieve Yediya. You use powers of analysis to gain knowledge, but ultimately those are just knowledge. If all of those things would be given over to me as knowledge, they would simply be pieces of knowledge. The only thing that per se is chachma is Yiras Hashem, fear of God. The way I define that, he doesn't exactly explain to us why. The way I think he means is because man is created with this paradoxical nature that he has a tendency and feels like rebelling against the will of God. No other creature does that. Not the angels, not the stars, not the turtles, not the amoebas, just man. So man has a problem with Yiras Hashem. He's created with a paradoxical nature. Real chachma is figuring out how to make sure he functions with Yiras Hashem. And by the same token, therefore, sur me rabina, and how to be sur, to turn away from bad, not just not to do bad, but how to, in one's nature, in one's midos, stay away from bad. That requires Bina, because as he said, for each person it's different. It's not simply idea. It has to be mulled over. Every person has their moral challenges in life. It's a daily thing, and we work on it and think about it, and the conclusions you come to, your battle plan won't work for the guy next to you, because it's a different battle. So therefore it requires Bina. Everything else you'll study about the world, with all of the depth and all the beautiful sciences, you might use Bina to write your dissertation, because nobody did that research yet. But once you did it, now it's knowledge. Now I can open up what you wrote, and it's facts. It's been documented, or it's wrong. But if it's right, then it's Yediyah, and he quoted from the Yashar Mikandya, a very, very deep Svarim, who said, because Seichel is not Yediyah. Yediyah is knowledge, and Seichel is a different faculty. Says Rav Kook, Yiras Hashem, and working on oneself to naturally align his will with that of Hashem and to thereby stay away from bid, that requires seichel and bina. The next little paragraph was that sin is metamtem halev, it causes spiritual stoppage, and then he explained, well, he made the first observation that we don't feel that until we try to do good. It's until we try to correct it, then all of a sudden we feel just how far we are. A person can going in darkness and not realizing he's adding more and more difficulty. He's lobbing more mud on himself that he's going to have to ultimately swim through. It's just going to make it harder, but he doesn't start to feel that until he tries to turn around, until he tries to swim upstream. He doesn't realize what a torrent it is that's coming at him. And the insight that he then says, that's why we have to be very careful to fully eradicate ra, to eradicate bad midas from within ourselves, because so long as we don't do that, it's there, and it's, he used that phrase, chozer v'neir. It's every time I revisit it, every time I act on it, it reawakens itself, which makes more spiritual stoppage. If you recall, we had read it from his sitter a few weeks ago. He said that when a person has had a long time of davening without kavana, he used similar terminologies, like there are stones blocking the conduit. And when he rekindles tefillah b'kavana, so it's a gradual process of clearing away those blocks. It doesn't happen all at once. You have to fight through it. Need some good Roto-Rooter to get through that. So that's the idea here. We have to fully take away the Ra, otherwise it further is Matamtem, it further creates blockage. And then when he spoke about this Yog LaTorah, he says it's not just a protective measure, really just what the Torah said is bad. The rabbi said don't do this also, just there's nothing really bad about what the rabbi said, but they just didn't want you to get close to the real thing. He said it's not so. Anything that is close in definition to what the Torah forbade or leads to what the Torah forbade is per se bad. By the way, this happens to have Talmudic and Lumdish implications. It's a big discussion in the Lumdus when we study Gemara. They talk about a Cheftza de Isura. All right, just so we're not only we do Rav Kook, we're doing brisk today also. You can say a brisker Lumda after today also. Sometimes we talk about whether a Cheftza, his classic, all right, you can say you're a Chaim Brisker when you walk out today. We talk about Cheftza and Gavra. When there's a prohibition, is it only on the person? When it's Yom Kippur, and there's a challah roll in front of me. Here it is, Yom Kippur and a challah roll. Is the challah roll something bad? No, there's just an isser on the God. There's a prohibition on the person. I can't eat today. The prohibition is on me. There's nothing bad about this piece of food, but there's a prohibition on me not to eat it. But if it's a non-kosher item, okay, if it's a slice of ham, most of us would intuit that the thing is considered bad. It's an isser cheftza. The thing is bad. They talk about in rabbinic prohibitions where the rabbi said that something is prohibited. Is that an isser gavra, person? Or an isser chefta, or is it the item? Is the item bad? In other words, did the rabbis just say, we don't want you to get close to the things that are really bad, so we said don't eat it, but there's nothing really wrong with it? Or do you say, no, once the rabbis forbade it, that means the item itself is bad? I don't want to get into where this has ramifications, but whether something is an isser gavra or an isser chefta has broad implications in the way we interpret halacha. What he's really saying, to put it in Lumdish jargon instead of Musa jargon, is that when the rabbis forbade something, it's because there's something wrong with the thing. It's not just, this is fine, but don't eat it because tomorrow you'll eat that. If it leads in the direction of sin, it itself is bad. He doesn't say it, but the flip side of that is that everything that leads in the good direction is good, and everything that leads in the bad direction is bad, which brings me back to what I believe the Chovos HaLevavos says, is that everything in life is really either bad or good. Even though we have mitzvos, we have averos, and we have a broad area that's really just reshus, you know, which shirt should I wear today? This one, I don't know, you're going to ask your reino, what should I serve as a side dish today? Peas or carrots, I have to call my rav. You know, it doesn't, there's a lot of things that are just, it's reshus, but many things in life, when we really think about it, there's a good decision and a bad decision. I don't know what the peas and carrots necessarily. maybe it's a beta carotene, if you, but whatever it is. But most decisions, there's something. This would probably be a better decision in this case. The head's in the right. This is my lazy way out. This is my benevolent way. You know. So most, if it's using a good meat, if it heads toward mitzvos, it's good. If it heads toward averus, it's bad. And certainly the things that are in the immediate vicinity of an avera are bad in and of themselves. And he says that's why our sages forbade them. There is something inherent about it. Okay, so we'll continue next time.
Are we going to be here next week or next week?
No.
I just work here.